Welcome back to the Positive View of Rural. Today we're continuing our conversation with Ben Winchester about the changing narrative of rural and how we're rewriting that narrative. And Ben is going to talk to us. We talked last week, last episode, about lots of how rural has changed and the people that are choosing to move in and this astonishing fact that 51% of people would like to live in a lower density population area, but they just haven't figured out how they're going to manage that yet. So Ben, I'd love to talk about some of the things that small towns can do, things that businesses can do, and things that individuals can do in their community to help make it easier for people that want to choose lower density living can maybe choose your town and region to make that their home place.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me back here. But this is very exciting for us. This falls under our umbrella of rewriting the rural narrative, where we're really trying to show that our small towns have been honestly quite vibrant for their ability to manage the changes that have been happening within our rural communities for so long. When we talk about some of the ability to, and I want to have a small caveat here in terms of the vibrancy and the vitality that we've seen in our rural communities. Again, when we hear the headlines about small towns struggling, it glosses over the fact that our small towns have done a heck of a job managing the changes that have been taking place over the past 100 years. So we've had school boards. These are volunteer school boards who've been able to manage the transition from individual schools to school districts to consolidated districts and have balanced budgets again. And this is all in light of the massive decline in the number of kindergarten students entering schools. So we're starting to hit a new kind of leveling out period in terms of school enrollments too. But we've managed our Main Street changes, we manage our school enrollment changes quite well. So in a way, I believe rural areas are actually a positive microcosm for some of the ways to manage change across the United States and society in general. I just want to kind of start with that. That I've been, for how much we think that small towns struggle, I actually point to them as real success stories of being able to manage this these types of global changes we've been able to witness here. So as our small towns have become really welcoming places for a number of different people, and this is not just religious diversity, but ethnic diversity and racial diversity over the years, that my second arm of research looks at nonprofit groups as an indicator for societal vibrancy in our rural communities. So what we do know is that, and I've got Minnesota data, of course. I could pull yours too, but I don't have it in front of me. But in Minnesota, we had roughly a 7 to 8% increase in population over the past 10 years. But at the same time, we had a 17% increase in the number of nonprofit groups. So this type of growth in our nonprofit sphere is an indicator that people still do like doing things socially. They like to get together, like to create clubs, they like to create foundations. And this is true even in our most rural counties where we had a 5% population decline. There's still a 10% increase in the number of nonprofits. And as we start digging into the data, we find that these newcomers to our small towns, while they haven't been involving themselves in the traditional place-based groups, are heavily involving themselves in some of the interest-based groups. And this is a major sociological shift here that I want to describe. And this goes from, historically, people have been involved in place-based groups that have a wide focus. So, for example, the Hancock Community Betterment Club may have done things from helping the church do some fundraising to building a senior center or helping put up a park at the school. And a lot of people were involved in that group. But today, we see more and more people involved in interest-based groups that have a wide geography. So it may be now the West Central Minnesota Snowmobile Association, where, again, you've got this type of societal preference that's shifting. And this is one of the actual challenges that we've got in our small towns, is how to involve these people in our existing groups without kind of putting them off from some of the place-based activities. I know it sounds odd, but this is for me a struggle that we go through. So while on one hand we have people who, or we have communities that find it difficult to get people to run for city council or the school board or county commissioners, but our snowmobile and bicycling groups are thriving. So this is this, for me, is number one, an indicator that our small towns are still vibrant in terms of social connections, but how people are involved has dramatically changed. So our leadership programs need to adapt to this type of new involvement that people have in our rural communities. And so this is part of the social maintenance that we need to do. If we're living and breathing in our small towns, how do we get these new people to our small towns to, number one, become involved in our community groups, and then connected to groups that they care about? And so it's not a matter of walking up to someone and saying, you know, do you want to join the Lions Club? And it's some sort of open-ended obligation that you, as a newcomer, don't know what to make of that. So
right. My favorite are the 5-year board terms. Like, you're going to serve a 3-year term on the board, and then, you know, 5-year leadership span. And you, if you get committed, then you're in this thing forever. And there's no 1-year commitment. I can't even just like work on a project with you for a few months. I have to, you know, commit 3 years of my life when I don't even know what 3 years of my life looks like.
Yeah, and then at the same time, you show up at the first meeting, and you're one of 4 people there. So all of a sudden, you're shouldering 25% of the load for a group that you're not sure of. So, you know, there are some, we need to be humble about our groups and need to be cognizant of the fact that the newcomers may not want to be involved in the groups we've got. So how do we connect the existing social infrastructure to the newcomer infrastructure in our rural communities? This is our challenge. So it's good news in terms of, again, when we pulled these newcomers, we found out that they gave more money than they did, not just in their previous community, but than the resident population gives in the town they're in. They spend more time volunteering. They don't mind leading these groups, and they tend to just be civically involved more so than the resident population. So these newcomers tend to be dedicated to the community, but their definition of community is no longer place-based, it's interest-based. And so this is one of the areas of work that we've got on the leadership side of our rural community development activities.
So let's move to what businesses and individuals can be doing. What can they do? I'm just a business owner. I'm just a person in my town. What can I be doing that is helpful in the change to newcomers and then in welcoming new people into the community, or in making my community and region more welcoming and a better target for people coming in?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, when some of the local businesses and especially local real estate agents, they're on the front lines of in terms of seeing these newcomers, where not even neighbors necessarily see the newcomers, because the newcomers, especially in winter, you know, you come and go in the dark. But you may, you know, live in one town and work in another, and you're gone before the sun comes up. As people on the front lines engage themselves more with these newcomers, we do need to be more cognizant of where these people like to spend their time, where they like to spend their money, and they're different. So in terms of local businesses, it does mean asking questions, being more welcoming, having open houses, asking them what products they'd like to see in their community more so. So that's on one side, but really it's kind of, you know, I call it two strategies here. One is, how do you get your community on the map? And number two is, what puts you over the edge in terms of getting people in your community? So on the map strategies here for us are really are digital. You know, Google does not do a very good job of approximating rural addresses, so we've undertaken efforts, significant efforts in the state of Minnesota, to ensuring that every business, every park, every swimming pool, every community center is on the map, and not just on the map, but in the right place. I've seen them position hotels 2 miles west of town when the hotel is right in the middle of town. So we've had to correct a number of issues that we've run across there. So it's really making sure all of your assets are on the map. And we spent a good 6 to 9 months doing that. This is not a small effort, but it's something that your high school kids can be involved in doing. And then one thing that we're seeing here from an economic development point of view is that housing in small towns is a constraint. So when we look at this brain gain, or the movement of people 30 to 50 that we witnessed in the 90s and then saw it slow in the 2000s, not just was there the mortgage crisis, but there was actually a lower availability of housing stock. So as some of the vacant homes were filled up in the 90s migration, there just weren't enough homes in the 2000s. for people to move into. So this is an opportunity during the baby boomer retirement phase that we're just entering. As homes become available, we need to encourage and make available the transition of housing for some of these older residents. We don't want the houses to sit for so long they're in disrepair. We want to make sure that the homes are maintained, that they're kept up, and this makes a difference. So as our homes become available, as these baby boomers leave, this is a huge opportunity for us to paint the migration, to continue this migration into rural areas. So for me, housing is economic development. If your HRA or housing authority is not working with your economic development agency over the next 25 years, this is going to differentiate the success that we're going to find in rural communities. Now, another point here is that many of these newcomers were unable to continue their career. So they're able to take a job. They're making the sacrifice. It's a trade-off here. They're making the sacrifice to move to a rural community because quality of life is the trump card. But they're losing out on their career opportunities. So economic development-wise, there may be opportunities that actually, number one, provide a resource for these potential newcomers to build their skill sets and to build businesses around their skill sets as they're moving in. But this entails our newcomers being connected to our economic development agencies at the time they move. So ED professionals should be working with our real estate agents, number one. Real estate agents tend to be a little protective in terms of their customers. So
Economic developers as well.
Yes, exactly. But we've also found that these newcomers start businesses and buy businesses at rates much higher than the resident population. So, I mean, it's almost like the populating of our rural communities in the 1800s. Now, we've got these pioneers that are moving out to our rural communities. We're seeing that again. These newcomers are pioneers. They're taking over businesses that may have been closed. They're starting businesses with either their career connections, or they're extending a business from an urban area by being able to telecommute. So this is where broadband becomes an issue too. Is, you know, it's not just the availability of broadband quite undefined. It is the availability of a big enough broadband pipe to maintain a viable economic connection to your urban counterparts. So we just moved from the town of Hancock, which is in western Minnesota, and there we had a local cooperative that put fiber to the home, and we were able to have a 20 meg down and 20 meg up connection, which, I mean, I can't even tell you. Even right now, my upstream is 1.5 meg, and that apparently is, you know, what you get in an urban area of St. Cloud, Minnesota, where, you know, back in Hancock, my town is 700 people, it had a stronger and faster internet than all my friends in the metro. And so when we think about where these pioneers are going to move, if you need a big pipe, it's going to be in some of those places. So these are just some of the, I know I'm kind of all over the place, but there is no one strategy. There's multiple strategies to use in terms of how you accommodate these newcomers.
So I think maybe the best thing to do is to help people find you and to find your research so that they can connect with what you do. So tell people where they can find you.
Sure. If you just Google, I think if you Google Rural Brain Gain, you will find us. And I'm with the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Community Vitality. And if you just click on Community at the Extension website, you'll see a pointer to our research there.
Excellent. I want to thank you so much, Ben. I know that we've been connected off and on through just online for a long time, but we hadn't had taken time to sit down and talk, and I really enjoyed getting to hear some of the vast knowledge that you've accumulated on how much rural has changed lately. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. I appreciate everything you bring to this discussion. I believe that all of us, and there's not a large number, but all of us that have been helping to rewrite this narrative are really helping to rebuild our rural communities. So thank you.
Excellent. Thank you so much, and we'll see everybody next week.